strawberries and blackberries and weed until the sun is high. They eat the berries from the bush. I expect to see a winged shadow over them, but there's nothing but this. The garden, green and sweet. Life-giving flowers ushering forth sweetness from fruit. Jojo sits on his haunches and chews. I bend over him. Tell me, I say, what it tastes like. He ignores me. Please? He swallows and I can read the answer on his face. No. How he holds the deliciousness inside him, a rich secret. I want to remember, I say. Ask Riv, ask him to tell you. Enough, Jojo says, pulling out a weed with a deep root.
What you say? Riv asks.
He whips the weeds from the soil like knives through cake.
I didn't had enough berries, Jojo said. I'm full.
He looks through me and bends to pick at stray grass. Leone and Michael leave without walking out of the garden. The red car cranks to life and growls down the road, and they disappear in the tunnel of trees. I think about climbing into the car with them, just to see where they go, but I don't. I follow Jojo and Riv and Kayla instead. I walk in the boys' footsteps, and I watch.
I watch the way Riv ushers them around furrows and troughs, how he cooks them beans for dinner, the way he makes sure they're clean when they lie down to sleep.
Watching this family grabs me inside, twists and pulls tight. It hurts. It hurts so much I can't look at it, so I don't. I go outside. The night is cloudy. I want to burrow into the earth to sleep, but I'm so close. I'm so close. I can hear the sound of the waters the scaly bird will lead me over, tumbling with the wind. So I crawl under the house instead, and I lie in the dirt under the living room where they all sleep, making a cot of the earth. And I sing songs without words. The songs come to me out of the same air that brings the sound of the waters. I open my mouth, and I hear the rushing of the waves. This is what I see. Across the face of the water, there's land. It is green and hilly, dense with trees, riven by rivers. The rivers flow backward. They begin in the sea and end inland. The air is gold, the gold of sunrise and sunset, perpetually peach. They are homes set atop mountain ranges, in valleys, on beaches. They are vivid blue and dark red, cloudy pink and deepest purple. They are yurts and adobe dwellings and teepees and longhouses and villas. Some of the homes are clustered together in small villages, graceful gatherings of round, steady huts with domed roofs. And there are cities, cities that harbor plazas and canals and buildings bearing minarets and hip and gable roofs and crouching beasts and massive skyscrapers that look as if they should collapse so weirdly. They flower into the sky, yet they do not. There are people, tiny and distinct. They fly and walk and float and run. They are alone. They are together. They wander the summits. They swim in the rivers and sea. They walk hand in hand in the parks, in the squares, disappear into the buildings. They are never silent. Ever present is their singing. They don't move their mouths and yet it comes from them, crooning in the yellow light. It comes from the black earth and the trees and the ever-lit sky. It comes from the water. It is the most beautiful song I have ever heard, but I can't understand a word. I am gasping when the vision passes. The dark underbelly of River's house looms before me, creaking, then silent. I look to my right and see a flash of the water, the rivers, the wilderness, the cities, the people. Then darkness. I look to my left and see that world again, and then it is gone. I claw at the air, but my hands strike nothing. They rend no doorways to that golden isle. Absence. Isolation. I keen. When I leave the crawl space as the sun rises, Leone and Michael are slamming car doors and walking toward the house. The trees are still and silent in the blue dawn light. The air even wetter than the day before. The sun is a hint of shining light through the trees. The sound of the water is strong as now. That other place hovers at the edge of my vision.
As they half walk, half stumble together, Leone looks over her shoulder like someone walks there, on her right, behind her. I dart forward because I see a flash. For a breath, someone is there. Someone with a face like JoJo's, lanky and tall like Riv. Someone with the same eyes as the saltwater woman who lays in the bed. And then nothing. Only air. Leone and Michael stop at the door, hug and murmur, while I circle the spot where I saw the flash. The air feels like needles. You need to sleep, sugar baby, Michael says. I can't, not yet, Leone says. Just lay down with me. I got something to do.
Really?
I'll be back, Leone says. They kiss and I turn away. Something about the way Michael grips the back of her neck and Leone palms his face seems desperate. So desperate and needy it demands privacy. He disappears into the house and she walks down the side of the road. I cannot help but follow her. We walk single file under the overarching oaks, the cypress, the pines. The road is so old it's almost been beat to gravel. Every so often there's a house, silent and shut. In some, people speak in low voices, brew coffee, cook eggs. Rabbits and horses and goats graze for their morning feed. Some of the horses come to the lips of the yards, raise their heads above their fences, and Leone brushes their wet noses with her palm as she walks past. The houses come a little closer together. Leone crosses the street and I see it. A graveyard. The headstones are half ovals dug into the earth. Some have pictures on them. Pictures of the dead once living. She stops in front of a grave near the front of the cemetery, where the newly dead are buried. And as she sinks to her knees in front of it, I see the boy I saw over Leone's shoulder this morning. But now he is etched into marble. And under the picture of his face, a name. Given Blaze Stone. Leone pulls a cigarette from her pocket and lights it. The smell of it is soot and ash. You ain't never here. Birds are waking in the trees. Would you do it, Given? They rustle and turn. She's given up. They chirp and alight. Would you? The birds swoop over our heads. They chatter one to the other. Would you give her what she wants? Leone is crying now. She ignores the tears, lets them fall from the blade of her chin to her chest. When they freckle the skin of her collarbone, only then does she wipe them off. Maybe I'm too selfish. A small gray bird lands at the edge of the plot. It needles the earth twice, feeling for breakfast. Leone sighs, and it catches and bubbles into a laugh. Of course you won't come. She bends and picks up a stone embedded into the dirt above Given's grave, and she untucks her shirt, holds the hem, and puts the rock into the pocket made by the hanging material. She stands and talks to the air, and the bird hops and flitters away. What did I expect? Leone wanders among the headstones, bending and collecting rocks from all the graves, from those just beginning to gather on raw earth to those at the center and back of the graveyard, where the stones are wind and water-worn, the names shallow etchings. The birds wheel up in a great flock in the sky, away to find richer earth. When Leone walks home, the basket made by the front of her shirt is heavy with rocks, and she cries. The long road is quiet. Her tears darken the stone. They are still wet when she walks into the house, past JoJo and Riv and Kayla, still asleep in the living room, into her mother's room. The smell in that room is all salt, ocean and blood. She kneels and lets them tumble out and onto the floor, looks at the saltwater woman who has startled awake and says, okay. The tears and the ocean and the blood could burn a hole through the nose. The saltwater woman, the woman Leone crawls toward over the rocks as she says, mama, mama, looks at Leone with so much understanding and forgiveness and love that I hear the song again. I know that singing. I've heard it from the golden place across the waters. A great mouth opens in me and wails. I am an empty stomach. The scaly bird lands on the windowsill and caws.
Chapter 13, Jojo. Last night, Richie crawled under the house and sang. I listened to it rise up through the floor, and I couldn't sleep. Pop turned his back to us as he slept and coughed over and over again. Kayla woke to whimpering every half hour, and I shushed her over the sound of the singing. We all slept late, but Pop has risen by the time I get up from the sofa. Kayla throws her arm over where I slept, and I pull the sheet over her. It's almost noon when I walk out to the yard to see the boy crouched in the tree outside Mam's window. Somewhere out in the back, I hear Pop's axe swish and thud. Come on, I whisper. I don't look up at the tree when I say it. Don't look at the boy inching down, dropping and making no noise, raising no dust. If he was a real boy, the bark would come off in little papery flakes, fall like dry rain. But it doesn't. He stand next to me, curved at the shoulders. He knows I'm talking to him. I lead him across the sun-washed yard and back into the shadows of the woods, where Pop is. A sound like hammering pops and rings in the silence. And again, Pop is beating something. I mean to walk like him, head up, shoulders straight, back a plank, but I find my head down, back curled, all of me drooping. Whenever Pop done told me his and Richie's story, he talked in circles, telling me the beginning over and over again, telling me the middle over and over again. Circling the end like a big black buzzard angles around dead animals. Possums or armadillos, or wild pigs or hit deer. Bloating and turning sour in the Mississippi heat. Pop's banging apart one of the old pins. Hitting the corner of it with a sledgehammer until it buckles and folds. Already half buried in the dirt. I stop, and Richie walks two steps more and stops. I can't decide whether he's eating the sun or shrugging it off. Either way, it's like his shadow is laid over his skin, a dark mass from head to toe, and it walks with him. His hair is the longest I've ever seen it, and it stands up from his head like parasitic moss. Pop swings the hammer down and it cracks, the splinters turn to shards, his sweat is a glaze. Termites got in it, eating it hollow, Pop says. Won't keep nothing in and nothing out once they're done with it. You need help? I ask. Keep these boys together, Pop says. He swings the sledgehammer again, splinters the wood at the joints. I kick the logs to herd them to a pile. Where my foot hits, dust rises. Termites spin and flutter through the air, swarming, their white wings flashing. Pop swings again, grunts. Pop? Yeah? You never told me the end of that story. What story? About the boy Richie. The hammer hits the dirt. Pop never misses. He sniffs and swings the sledgehammer like a golf club, testing his weight, feeling the swing. A termite lands on my cheek and I swat it off, try not to frown, to keep my face smooth as Pop's. What's the last piece I told you? You said he was sick. He just got whipped and he was hot and throwing up. You said he wanted to go home. Richie stands untouched by the termites. They waft away from him on an invisible wind. Find us, they say. I brush them away with my whole hand, but Pop flinches and flicks them with two fingers. That's what I said, Richie says so low his voice could be the brush of my hand across my face. Pop's finger along his eyebrow. Pop nods. He tried to escape. Well, no, he ain't tried. He did it. He broke out? Pop swings. The wood cracks and crumbles. Yeah, Pop says. He kicks at the wood, but there's no force in it. So he went home. Pop shakes his head, looks at me like he's trying to figure out how tall I am, how big my hands, how long my feet. I can wear shoes now. Sometimes when he sends me on errands when it's raining outside, I put on the boots he keeps just inside the back door at the bottom of the pantry. I look at him and raise my eyebrows, tell him without saying it. I can hear this. I can listen. Was a gunman named Blue that did it. It was a baseball Sunday. There was visitors. Some good time girls, some men's wives came. But Blue ain't never had nobody. Called him Blue because he was so dark he shined like a plum in the sun, on the line. But he wasn't right in the head. That's why none of the women would talk to him. Wouldn't take no visits with him. So he caught one of the women inmates out by the outhouses and dragged her off into a stand. Pop stops, looks back at the house. What'd he do? I say. He raped her, Pop says. She was a strong woman, hands near as calloused as his from all the picking and sewing she did. But she wasn't no match for him. Hit anybody in the head hard enough, it knocked him out. Her face, you could barely recognize her. And maybe nothing would have happened to Blue for doing it if she hadn't been the sergeant's wife's favorite. Always the one she called to hang wash and scrub floors or mind the kids. Blue had enough brains to know that. So he left her there, striped skirt up around her head, covering her bloody face, that fabric turning muddy and red. Left her breathing bubbles. To run. But before he could get away good, he found Richie. I don't know where. Whether Richie was around the kitchens or the bathrooms or taking tools from one place to the next, but when Blue lit out, Richie was with him. I found him, Richie says. He was climbing up off her. Big bloody hands. Was one of the strongest gunmen. He could outpick most everybody. He say to me, you want a face like hers, boy? I told him no. And he waved one of them big hands and said, come. Part of me went because I didn't want to turn my face red like hers. And part of me went because I was sick of that place, because I wanted to go. The woods around us are great dark green tangle. Oaks reaching low and wide. Vines tangled around trunks. And drooping from branches, poison sumac and swamp tupelo, and cypress, and magnolia growing up around us in a circular wall. You went after them? I ask. Rich is leaning toward Pop so far that if he were alive, he'd have fell. His jaw works from side to side, his teeth grinding against each other. Yes? Pop squeezes the hammer so hard his knuckles whiten, and then he lets his hands loose. He squeezes again, lets his hands loosen. Yes, Richie says, yes. A crane cuts the air, gray and pink-kneed, overhead. It doesn't squawk or call. It says nothing. What happened? Pop measures me again. I push my shoulders back, make sure my chin stays hard. Jojo? I nod. A man like Blue is a man like Hogjaw. Hogjaw, the big, brutal white man who worked with Pop and the dogs. Pop swings and another corner of the pen collapses. Got no regard for life. Any life. Richie opens and closes his mouth, works his tongue between his teeth. It is as if he's eating air. I had to track them. Swallowing Pop's words. Less mine was paid to the women on Sundays. Was 5 hours before anybody found her, realized Blue and Richie was missing, before the sergeant put it all together, Pop says. That's enough time to run them 15 miles to the edge of Parchment, to get back to the free world. The warden yelling at everybody, his clothes wet as if he went swimming in them. A white woman next, he said. It was enough time, Richie says, his voice grating and hollow as a frog's croak. Starved for rain. He ran so fast, sometimes I had to follow him by sound. Him talking to himself the whole time, not himself. His mama, telling her he was coming home, that he wanted her to sing for him. Sing for your son, he said. Sing. The hammer whistles through the air, the termites writhe in their ruined home. I wasn't fast enough. He came up on a girl fetching water from a spring. Knocked her down, Pop says. Ripped her dress clean down the front. She ran home, holding it like that. Little white girl with red hair. Told her daddy some crazy nigger attacked her. I stopped him, Richie says. Hit him with the tree limb. Hard enough to get him off her. Hard enough to get me punched in the face. Word was out about him. Richie and Blue had run long and far enough for the sun to set, and white folks was gathering. All the menfolk. Little boys younger than Richie in overalls, hanging by one strap on the backs of pickups. What seemed like a thousand of them. Looked like their faces had a red mist on them in the truck lights, but everything else about them looked black in the dark. Clothes, hair, eyes. I could see it on them. The way every damn one of them seemed to lean forward, eager as hounds to the hunt. And they laughing. They couldn't stop. And I knew that when it came to the two of them, when it came to Blue and Richie, they wasn't gonna tell no difference. They was gonna see two niggas, two beasts, who had touched a white woman. Richie has never been so still, so silent. His mouth frozen open, his eyes wide and black. He is balanced on his toes, and he could be made of stone. But every part of Pop moves, his hands as he speaks, his shoulders folding forward as softly as a flower, wilting at the hottest part of the day. I've never seen them do that. His face, all the lines of his face, sliding against each other like the fault lines of the great fractured earth. What undergirds it? Pain. The sledgehammer falling. I ran them dogs past the fence, past the edge of parchment, out into the delta. Through the flat plain, the earth turned to scrub and balder from them black hands. All them black hands. The dirt black as them hands and crumbly. The way it gives under the foot leaves clear tracks. I followed their tracks, and the dogs followed the smell, through the bristly stands of trees, over them deceitful fields, past the spring and the shacks to more fields, more shacks with white men and boys gathering and swarming, moving like one thing, to kill. Pop ducks his head, wipes his sweat on his shoulder. He stomps his foot and is like a horse's, warning before it kicks. What happened? I prod. Pop doesn't look up. Warden and sergeants was in cars on the road, following the dogs, the baying. All the men roaming had their dogs out too, and it was a boy who stumbled across Blue. He was up a tree in one of them stands to the west. I had to squint at the shouts that came up when they found him. They started firing off their rifles, and the warden and sergeants and trusted shooters rode that way. I healed my dogs. Waited. Because they wasn't pointed west. They was pointed north, and I knew it was Richie they followed. Wasn't 5 minutes past before I saw the bonfire they lit, and I knew what was happening. I knew before I even heard Blue start screaming. Richie blinks. His fingers splayed like a bird's wings. His blinks start slow. But as Pop talks, they get faster until they're blurred like a hummingbird. And all I can see is his eyes. His black eyes. With a thin scrim over them. One of the trustees told me later that they was cutting pieces of him off. Fingers. Toes. Ears. Nose. And then they started skinning him. And that's when I followed the dogs. Making them quiet. Across that sky turning from blue to black. Across them fields to another stand of trees. And Richie hunched down at the base of one, cupping his black eye, crying, nose up, listening to Blue in the crowd. Richie makes fists, lets them go, makes fists, spreads his fingers to wings. They was gonna do the same to him. Once they got done with Blue, they was gonna come for that boy and cut him piece from piece till he was just some bloody soft, screaming thing, and then they was gonna string him up from a tree. Pop looks at me, every piece of him a quiver. He wasn't nothing but a boy, Jojo. They kill animals better than that. I nodded again. Richie is winding his arms around himself, hugging tighter and tighter, his arms and fingers growing incredibly long. I said, "It's gonna be all right, Richie." He said, "You gonna help me? Riv, which way should I go?" I healed the dogs, held out my hands to him, light side out, moved slow, soothed him, said, "We gonna get you out of this. We gonna get you away from here." Touched his arm. He was burning up. "I'm going home, Riv?" he asked. I squatted down next to him, the dog steady yipping, and I looked at him. He had baby hair on the edge of his scalp, Jojo. Little fine hair he'd had since he sucked at his mama's tit. "Yes, Richie, I'ma take you home," I said. And then I took the shank I kept in my boot and I punched it one time into his neck. In the big vein on his right side, held him till the blood stopped spurting. Him looking at me, mouth open. A child. Tears and snot all over his face. Shocked and scared until he was still. Pop speaks into his knees. Richie's head has tilted back until he's looking at the sky, at the great blue wash of it beyond the embrace of the trees. His eyes widen more, and his arms snap out and his legs spread, and he doesn't even see me and Pop. But he is looking at everything beyond us, past the miles we drove in that car, past the point where the pine trees turn to field and cotton and just budding spring trees, past the highways and towns back to the swamps and stands of trees hundreds of years old. At first I think he's singing again, but then I realize it is a whine that rises to a yell that rises to a scream, and the look on his face is horror at what he sees. I squint and barely hear Pop through Richie's keening. I laid him down on the ground, told the dogs to get. They smelled the blood, tore into him. Richie roars. Casper is somewhere out in the road, furious barking. The pigs are squealing. The horse is stamping his pen. Pop is working his hands like he doesn't know how to use them, like he's not sure what they can do. I wash my hands every day, Jojo, but that damn blood ain't never come out. Hold my hands up to my face, I can smell it under my skin. Smelled it when the warden and the sergeant came up on us. The dogs yipping and licking the blood from their muzzles. They torn his throat out, hamstringed him. Smelled it when the warden told me I'd done good. Smelled it the day they let me out on account I let the dogs that caught and killed Richie. Smelled it when I finally found his mama after weeks of searching, just so I could tell her Richie was dead, and she could look at me with a stone face and shut the door on me. Smelled it when I made it home in the middle of the night. Smelled it over the sour smell of the bayou and the salt smell of the sea. Smelled it years later when I climbed into bed with Philemon, put my nose in your grandmother's neck, and breathed her in like the scent of her could wash the other away. But it didn't. When Given died, I thought I'd drown in it. Drove me blind. Made me so crazy I couldn't speak. Did nothing come close to easing it until you came along. I hold Pop like I hold Kayla. He put his face in his knees, and his back shakes. Both of us bow together as Richie goes darker and darker, until he's a black hole in the middle of the yard, like he done sucked all the light and the darkness over them miles, over them years into him, until he's burning black, and then he isn't. There's soft air and yellow sunlight and drifting pollen where he was, and me and Pop embracing in the grass. The animals are quieting, and grunts and snorts and yips. "Thank you," they say. "Thank you, thank you, thank you," they sing.
Chapter 14. Leone. When I got home with my load of cemetery rocks, Michael left in my car. The weight of the stones in my shirt was heavy. Remind me of what it felt like to carry Jojo and Michaela, to bear another human being in my stomach. After I picked up the stones I dropped in Ma'am's room, I banged out the door to find Phantom Given. His head is cocked to the side, and he's looking down the shotgun line of the house, through the living room, through the kitchen, out the back door. He's listening. I stop where I am. "What?" The word comes out like a slung little dart. Even though I know it must be the dregs of the meth I swallowed, I still feel sober as a lead weight and here Given is, burnished and tall, in the living room. His mouth is moving like he's repeating something that someone else is saying, and if he could speak, it would be a mumble. Whatever he's hearing, whatever he's mimicking, makes him run to the open doorway of the room, to pause on the threshold of the kitchen, to bow his head and grip the frame. Last time I saw him here, he was living. The blood beating through him like drums. He and Pop had just argued over something. Over the Nova or his middling grades or the fact that besides the bow and arrow, he didn't seem to have any passion for anything besides playing football. "You need direction, son," Pop had said to him. Given had been sitting on the couch and he watched Pop walk out the back door, slump down, and winked and whispered at me. "And you need to take the stick out your ass, Pop." Given not Given's shoulder blades bunched together like fists under his shirt. He shakes his head at me once, then again at whatever he hears. "I'm going crazy," I tell myself. "I'm going fucking crazy." I walk past Given to look out the screen door. Pop and Jojo are hunched down in the backyard, in the dirt by the pig pen, talking. I can't hear anything from this far away, but Given can, and whatever he hears makes his head shake faster and faster. His fists punch noiselessly, once and again, in the molding. It leaves no mark. I expect to feel the brush of his t-shirt against my arm when I walk past, but feel nothing but misty cool. Given's mouth moves, and I can make out what he's saying without words. "Pop," he mouths. "Oh, Pop." I squint. It looks like Jojo is rubbing Pop's back, hugging Pop. And I realize I ain't never seen Pop on the ground before if he wasn't pushing a seed into it or wrestling some animal or pulling up weeds. A dog bark rips through the creaking kitchen, and Given starts and turns to me, mouths one word, hands open, and beckoning me like he could pull an answer from me. "Who?" he mouths. "Who is that?" He runs to the screen door. Casper barks again, a sound that shies up to a panicked yip. Pop seems to be sinking, Jojo holding him up. I don't know this world. Given holds his arm up in front of him like he could block something. I wonder if this vision of my brother is an aftershock of yesterday's high. A shaky meth tremor that comes once, if the massive hit I swallowed has unsewn my body and mind, unseamed me. Given is still there. As the dog's bark rises, Given bleeds. I don't see wounds, but he bleeds anyway, from his neck, from his chest, where he was shot. He braces himself on the wood frame of the closed screen door, his arms and legs straining. Something is pulling him outside. Pop and Jojo are curled in two, and the dog is still barking. But I don't see nothing. Don't see anything until I blink, and like a dark flash at the corner of my eye, I see a churning black cloud come to earth in the yard. But then I blink again, and it's gone. Given slumps and runs his hands up and down the doorsill. He did this when he was alive, wore the wood of the sills in the house smooth with his rubbing. He freezes and looks at me. And I wish he was alive, was flesh, because I'd kick him. Kick him for not being able to speak. Kick him for seeing whatever it is he sees or hears out in the yard and not sharing that with me. Kick him for being here, now, for taking up space in the waking, sober world, right before me. for knocking the world sideways. Birds flying into glass windows, dogs barking until they piss themselves in fear, cows collapsing to their rumps in fields and never rising, still winking and smiling, every dimple and tooth declaring the joke. For dying, always for that. Given shakes his head again, but this time, slowly. But still, his face blurs. I reach out and step toward him, to push him, maybe, to see if I can feel his brown arms, the calluses on his hands like patches of concrete. But Michaela's cry pierces the air, and he's gone. Michaela's standing on the sofa, walking from one end of it to another, yelling. Sleep-matted hair, sleep-swollen face, her little legs clumsy with waking. She trips and falls face first and mouths the cushion.
"The boy, the blackbird," she sobs.
I kneel next to the sofa, pat her hot little back. "What boy, Michaela?"
"The blackbird, the black boy."
She stands, runs to the arm of the sofa farthest from me, straddles and slides off. "He flies!" She wakes up like that all the time, trailing the blankets of her dreams behind her. She's still sleepy. I catch her under one armpit, swing her up, put her head down on my shoulder. "Go back to sleep," I say. When Michaela kicks, her toes are little shovels digging into my belly, trying to break the dirt of the softest part of me. It used to be my walk rocked her to sleep. She dreamed in my womb with sightless blue eyes. Now she flails, smashes my mouth with her hand, and will not let me hold her.
"He want ma'am,"
she screams, and at that my arms go dead. And Michaela slides down my front, noodle limp. She lands running straight to Mama's door and knocks at it with her little fists. Each little thud married to a breathy whine, her eyes rolling like a panic colt's. "Michaela," I kneel, "ain't no man trying to take Mama nowhere." Her little knobby knees brush the wood as she hangs from the doorknob, trying to turn with her weight. What I say is mangled truth. No man wants to take Mama, but what she's tasked me to do will usher her away. I move to Michaela on my knees, floorboards grinding my bones, and I wonder at the fear spilling through my chest, scalding hot grits. I wonder at my short, round toddler with her toes grazing the door, at the future and what it will demand of me, of her. Michaela's fingers lose their grip on the knob, and I turn it, open it, point at Mama with an upturned palm. See? I am not prepared to see. Mama hangs half off the bed, half on, her toes on the floor, her legs bound up in sheets, twisted around her, stretched tinsel and thin as rope here, wide and voluminous there. Mama caught like a prize sailfish, the one who sails through the air, silver and white, still with the silky feel of the salt water on her. The one who shivers in the sun and fights. It is colder than a spring morning warrants in the room, cold as a November morning, and yet Mama sweats and moans and kicks. Michaela hops into the room, sniffs the air, takes hesitant steps, and reaches to the ceiling. She breathes one little word, again and again.
"Bird,"
she says. The room smells like Mama has been turned inside out, like piss and shit and blood. like intestines, a heartbeat away from rot. Her eyes are wild. Her arms are pinned in the sheets. Mama struggles to shrug them off. Mama? I say, and my voice seems high and small as Michaela's. Let me help. Too late, Mama says. Too late, Leone. I have to grab her arm hard to free it. My fingers leave shallow ditches in a row in her flesh, my handprint visible on her with every touch. Mama moans. I try to touch lighter, to hurt less. But I can't. What you mean? I say. Mama is bleeding under the skin. Everywhere my hands touch, there is blood. Trenches in the sand filling with seawater. Underneath, doom. Mama looks beyond me, to the corner where Michaela has seated herself. Still, except for the song she is singing, as she squints and then glares at Mama. Mama's eyes skitter to my face, up to the ceiling, down at her ruined body. Away. Away. I heard him, she whispers. Thought it was a... She pants. Cat. Who, Mama? Ain't never seen them. Sometimes heard them. What? Like somebody talking three doors down. In another room. I free one hand. Balled to a fist. Said he come for me. All these petals of blood. Ain't let me stay. No spirit. No God. No mystery. On her wrist, he lemo. The dead. Her forearm. Young, full of piss and vinegar. Rotting flowers. Vengeful as a beat dog. Fruitfulness gone to seed. Pulling all the weight of history behind him. Her breath whines. Like a cotton sack full of lead. She's right. But still a boy. I'm too late. Hungry for love. The cancer done broke her. Says he want me to be his mama. Broke her clean through. I always thought... Mama claws at my arm as I free her other hand. It would be your brother. I stop. The first dead I see, I can't breathe, would be him. Given is in the corner of the room, stretched along the seam where the walls join. He looms over Michaela, rigid and fierce as Pop. And for the first time, I am afraid. In life, there was a joke in every line of him, humor that ran along the bones of him, that everyone read in the hang of his shoulders, the shake of his head, his smile. There is none now. The weight of time he never bore in life holds him rigid now, cloaks him somber, whittles him sharp as Pop. He shakes his head. And speaks. Not. Michaela's little song sinks. Your. Mama begins to fight me. Mother. Mama looks beyond me, up to the cracked ceiling, pocked with thousands of little stalactites like the roof of a cave. Pop spent hours dipping a broom in paint and then stabbing the ceiling with the bristles, making circles and loops and swirls. Shaping the paint into stars and comets. Mama opens and closes her mouth, but makes no sound. I follow her gaze, but don't see nothing but the ceiling. That sorry drywall, turning gray from humidity. But Michaela, who whispers her song and waggles her fingers like she does when she sings Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, does. Not, and Given, who speaks the planes of his face converging and turning sharp as knives, does. Your, and Mama does. She rolls her eyes to the corner of the room where Given looms. She bares her teeth in something like a smile, something like a rictus. Mother, Given finishes. Mama slaps me, where her hand hit burns. She cuffs me with an open palm on the other side, and my ear throbs with blood. Her right fingers grab my cheek, dig into my eyebrow ridge, and she's holding my face straight, whispering against whatever is above us, at my back, whatever awful thing that's come for her. I hear a whisper above me. Come with me, Mama, he says. Come on. No, she says. Her fingers pull my eyelids up, up, painfully. Not my boy, she says. Feel like she's peeling the skin. Given, she breathes. I yank my head away. Baby, please. It's the word baby that makes me jump off the bed, because I hear her say it now, and I'm her baby again, soft-gummed and wet-eyed and fat, and she is whole and sweet-milked. Her hands fall away from me like husks from corn cobs, land just as brittle and dry on the bed, before she whips them up, faces them out, palms up. No, boy. No, Given says. I sweep the cemetery rocks from the floor where they've fallen, dumping them on the altar to join the rest of it I've already gathered. From the bathroom, cotton balls. From the cupboard, cornmeal. From my trip to the liquor store yesterday, rum. Say it, Mama says. She's let her hands fall. The litany, she says again, and her breath rattles in her throat. She doesn't turn her head to the side to look at the wall beyond me where Given stands, thrashing against some invisible thing that holds him there. Her mouth opens, a silent wail. Michaela is crying in a way I've never seen her cry before. Mouth working, but no sound. There's no time. This moment and ate it all up. The past. The future. Do I say the words? I blink. And up on the ceiling there is a boy. A boy with the face of a toddler. I blink again. Sand scouring my eye. And there is nothing.
Mama.
I choke, and it's as weak and wanting as a baby's.
Mommy.
Me crying and Mama's entreaties and Michaela's wailing and Given's shouting fill the room like a flood. And it must have been as loud outside as it is in here, because Jojo runs in to stand at my elbow and pops at the door. You got what you came for. Now get, Jojo says. At first I think he's talking to me, but then he's looking through me and up. And I know who he's talking to. There's strength in his voice, so much that I'm speaking even as I'm crying and pulling Mama up to my heart. For my mom, Brigitte, mother of all the Gede, mistress of the cemetery and mother of all the dead. I breathe hard, and it is a ragged sob. No, Leone, says Jojo. You don't know. He glares up at the ceiling.
Leone.
Mama chokes. Grand Brigitte, Judge. This altar of stones is for you. Accept our offerings, I say. Mama's eyes are steady rolling to the ceiling where the boy with the smooth face hovered, needy and balled up like a baby. Shut up, Leone. Please. Jojo says, you don't see. Mama's eyes, steady rolling to the wall where Given has stopped thrashing. They turn to me, beseeching.
Enter,
I say. Go, Jojo says. He looks up at where the boy flashed. Ain't no more stories for you here. Nobody owe you nothing here. He raises a hand to Given, and it is as if Jojo has unlocked and opened a gate. Because Given pushes through whatever held him. You heard my nephew, Given says. Go, Richie. I don't see anything, but something must have happened, because Given walks unbothered toward the bed. Pop has slid down the wall, all the upright parts of him crumbling as he looks at Mama. Makes himself look at Mama. For once. He's been orbiting her like a moon, sleeping on the sofa with his back to the door, searching the yard and woods for pens and bins and machines to fix so he can repair in the face of what he cannot. Mama's breath is a jagged wind, coming slower and slower, her eyes lowered to slits, her body ruined and still. Jojo steps out of Given's way. He scoops Michaela, who's crying.
Uncle.
Jojo swallows and looks right at Given. Jojo sees him. He recognizes him. He nods. And Given is Given again. Only for a breath, because he smiles and there's a joke again in his dimple. Nephew, Given says. Mama's breath slows to a choke. She looks at me, her face twisted.
Enter. Dance with us,
I whisper. Given's next to the bed, climbing into it, curling around her, saying, Mama, saying, I come for you, Mama, saying, I come, Mama. And Mama takes one long, ripping breath, her breath and blood and spirit beating frantic as a moth caught in a spider's web, and then, shh, Given says, I come with the boat, Mama. And then he moves his hand over her face, from her air-starved chin to her flared nostrils to her eyes, open and open, looking from me to Given to Jojo and Michaela to Pop at the door and then back to Given. Given's hand flutters above her face like he is a groom, and Mama is a bride, and he has pulled the veil from her head and let it fall back so they can look upon each other with love, clear and sweet as the air between them. Mama bucks and goes still. Time floods the room in a storm surge. I wail. We cry in chorus. Pop folded over in the door, me with Mama's warm nightgown still in my hands, and Michaela with her face smashed into Jojo's shoulder. But not Jojo. His eyes are shiny, but nothing comes from them, not even when he asks, What did you say? I can't speak. Sorrow is food swallowed too quickly, caught in the throat, making it nearly impossible to breathe.
Leone!
Anger spreads through me, oil over water. She asked, I say. Nah, Jojo bounces Michaela in his arms, looks at Mama like he's waiting for her to open her eyes, turn her head, say, Silly Jojo. Your words, they led in a river. That's what took her and Uncle Given away. Yes, he doesn't understand what it means to have the first thing you ever done right by your Mama be to usher in her gods. To let her go. Pop is sliding his way up the door to stand, but there's still a curve there at the top of his back. His shoulders, a bowl. His head swings on his neck like a pendulum. His throat, broken. She did, Jojo. Pop's voice is the only thing about him with some hardness to it. A sheathed knife. She couldn't bear that pain. Mam wouldn't leave us. Not even with Uncle Given. Jojo gains what Pop's lost of his bearing. First, a brace across his thighs. All the bow-legged softness of his pre-adolescence dissolved to a granite stance.
She did,
I say. Then across his chest, which makes his shoulders crowbar straight. She said, Jojo says. It was a mercy, son, Pop says. And then the headpiece so that the baby face, the last of the milk fat, is steel still, frozen for war. Only Jojo's eyes peer out, carrying some of the boy in them.
What you want?
I ask.
To say I'm sorry.
Those eyes.
To say I ain't want to.
I can't control my voice. It whistles high and whip thin. There is a rope of fire for my eyes. Behind my nose, down my throat, and it coils in a noose in my stomach. Mama is still warm.
'Cause I ain't. I did what she needed me,
I say. She could be sleeping. I ain't seen her face this smooth, without tension, in years. I want to slap her awake for asking me to let her go. I want to slap Jojo for looking at me like I had a choice. And I want to bring Given back from the dead and make him flesh again just so I can slap him too. For leaving.
For taking her. There's too much blank sky where a tree once stood.
All wrong. The noose tightens. Nothing, Jojo says. You can't give me nothing. He looks at Mama when he says it, and I stop smoothing her hair back from her still face. And then he's looking at me, and he's hard as Pop and soft as Mama. Censure and pity. I'm a book, and he can read every word. I know this. He sees me. He knows it all. Girl, Pop says. And then it stops tight and I am raging. Hateful at this world. And I let Mama slide to the mattress. And I stand and run at Jojo, who backs away. But he is not quick enough because I am there. And when I hit his face, pain cracks through my palm, pings through my fingers, so I do it again. And I do it again before I realize Michaela squalling in his arms, scrambling up his chest, trying to get away from me. And Jojo straight, straight as Pop, all the little boy gone from his eyes, the tide gone out. The sun scorching the residue of water away, leaving hot sand baking to concrete. And Pop's at my side, his body folding over me like a kite falling from the sky, as he grabs both of my arms and pulls them together so that my palms touch. That's enough, Pop says. No more, Leonie.
You don't know,
I say.
You don't?
Jojo's rubbing his face into Michaela's little shirt. And I want so much. I want to hit him again, and I want to hold him to me and palm his head again, like when he was a hairless baby, and I want to tell Jojo, we are family. And I want to ask him, what you seen, boy? What you seen? But I don't do none of that. Instead, I yank away from Pop, walk past Jojo and Michaela,